When I was a child, I was always oriented to scientific experiments around the house. I think I've confessed here at least once before in my time that at some point I discovered the mystery of the refrigerator light. How it always seemed to know to come on when you were coming for a glass of milk or a cold snack. You open the door and bam, it's on. Did it stay on all the time or just when I was coming? It was something of a Schrodinger's cat experiment, I think. Eventually, I bet some of you, like me, discovered the little lever on the inside frame of the refrigerator, the on-off switch, which then, as the door opens, obviously turns on. As it closes, it turns off. Well, I spent countless kilowatts in my power and glee at the ability, the power to be able to open that and close it again until my mother shooed me out of the kitchen. I wonder if you can also remember the first time you were staring in your image in the mirror and in a moment of uneasy self-consciousness, you discover the eyes somehow were always staring right back at you. You turn away and steal a quick sideways glance, trying to catch a glimpse of the eyes, not yet watching you, but there they were. Every time you looked, they were there too. The empirical trial failed for me every time, folks. So in a defiant show of disinterest, I would turn away and then using my peripheral vision would say, nothing yet, nothing yet, nothing yet. And then there they were again. The retina's mirror in the eyes meets the eyes, which gave an impertinent glare every time. It stops us short, doesn't it? To almost see something, but not quite. It seems to me that that's how we can maybe catch glimpses of resurrection life in our midst. If we look at it straight on, it may or may not make sense. But at some level, the tangible glimpse of God alive in our midst is, for most of us, an elusive, close but not quite enterprise of life. How would we even know when that was present? And yet, I believe with all my heart that God is always present with us, always ready, longing to be seen with the eyes that open down to our soul, extending an invitation into the creative force of goodness that is seated in creation and in every one of us. Here we are on the fourth Sunday of Easter, specifically the 22nd day of Easter, essentially halfway through our 7-week celebration. But this morning, we move curiously from the post-resurrection appearance stories that bring the Gospels to a close, and we return instead to John's 10th chapter, literally smack dab in the middle of John's Gospel, of John's epic story of the cosmic Christ come among us. And then even more curiously, today we get images of a gentle, caring shepherd. Yes, this is Good Shepherd Sunday, as it's known, and the shepherd is the one whom we are invited to follow. And at first glance, we can conjure up images of agrarian scenes with bleating sheep grazing beside still waters, a shepherd lounging around but tending his flock with a fierce devotion that means these animals are more than just provisions and investments in life, more than food and water, that these are the ones to whom the shepherd is so committed that he is willing to give his life for them. The one who provides and protects, the one who goes seeking the lost one, no count the cost. Friends, this is covenantal imagery, deeply rooted in the Judeo-Christian psyche that says long before we ever look in God's direction, God has been gazing upon us with steadfast love and mercy. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, says the psalmist. Because nothing in all creation can break the indissoluble bond of the divine covenant with us. I'm reminded of the difference, the distinction between a contract and a covenant. Two parties enter a contract defined by legal terms. A handshake can seal the deal, but it can be easily broken. It's ephemeral. But a covenant forges the relationship that extends beyond the terms of the agreement in legal code. And even if one party strays from the relationship, as we are wont to do, the other party holds on until we are ready to return. That's covenant. And steadfast love and mercy are the signature aspects of this divine covenant with us. You know, tomorrow, on the 22nd day of April, many of us will observe Earth Day. Our Earth flag is flying out front. It is a modern secular observance meant to draw us into the orbit of Earth's climate crisis, inviting us to see what is true and good and beautiful about the natural world in which we live, while also casting our eyes upon the trajectory of catastrophic climate changes and ecological collapse. But the truth is, friends, try as we might, we can't see greenhouse gas levels rising. We can't comprehend polar ice caps shrinking by the square miles. We can't fathom millions of barrels of oil spilled into the ocean. We cannot get our heads around the fact that the natural extinction rate of species on our globe has increased 10,000% in the last century as a result of humanity's adverse effects on ecosystems. Try as we might, we can't see these things. As long as we are looking in the proverbial mirror at ourselves, all we will ever see is our own eyes staring back at us, convincing us of the merit of selfish consumption and neglect. And then there's this cosmic Christ. The image of the Good Shepherd is, at first glance, a sweet pastoral scene of meekness. Nothing wrong with that. But make no mistake, the fierce and abiding truth when we gaze more deeply into that passage is that the shepherd is none other than the cosmic Christ who has come to dwell among us in this world, in this time. It is the incarnate Word who has breathed goodness into creation and into us. It is the one who has invited us to catch the vision of healing for all creation. God's kingdom come. God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. This is the same shepherd whose word wakes the dead and brings resurrection life into the orbit of creation here and now. This is the same shepherd who has a claim on us. And as our collect today says, that when we hear his voice, may we know him who calls us each by name and follow where he leads. So where does he lead? Well, it seems to me the remarkable beauty of God's decision to participate in the goodness of this creation and to invite us to participate in the fullness of resurrection life in the midst of this creation is that we don't have to cast our eyes downrange to another world after death or to another life as if this one doesn't really matter. It does. And the Good Shepherd comes into our midst and says, "This is the world that matters to God." So may we have eyes to see as God sees, and may we have courage and conviction to follow along those right pathways for God's name's sake. Amen.